Welcome, everybody. We're so glad you could join us. This is Module 2, Ethics and Law. I'm Joan D'Amico. I'll be your host for this evening, but we are also joined by two awesome panelists who will be our facilitators for this evening. And Module 2 is Ethics and Law. A lot of people want to know, do I need to be a lawyer? We're going to talk a little bit about that, and we have two facilitators who can also help explain just what you need to know in order to be good at this ethics and law, not only on the test, but on your everyday job. So let's kick things off. And can you name at least one law or code or rule that you may have read about as you reviewed the material? Let's see, First Amendment. Yes, that's a good one. Copyright, FOIA, DMCA, very good. Torts of privacy, FERPA, yes, for all of our educators, that's a good one. Defamation, HIPAA, yes, excellent. Libel, very good. A value, honesty, good one. Thanks, Kirk, for that. Excellent. Well, it sounds like you and looks like you've read the material. So I think we're going to have an interesting class tonight, and we're looking to kick things off. I also wanted to remind you that ethics and law, the KSA, is 15%. So I think if I do the calculation correctly, that's about 20 to 25, depending on how many questions are on your test, 20 to 25 questions that are going to deal with ethics and law. So it's a fairly hefty part of the computer-based exam. And also to remember that there is a code of ethics for public relations. If you've gone to the PRSA website or you've read the study guide, you'll see the code of ethics. There are also values and principles that apply to our profession. And we're going to learn tonight a little bit about how those values and principles help us make ethical decisions. And then we're going to also learn how we can apply ethics and law to our everyday jobs. And here to help us do that explaining, we have a great panel of guests. We have Kirk Hazlett, who is not only an APR, but also an APR fellow. And Kirk, I'll invite you to unmute yourself and explain a little bit about your APR journey and what an APR fellow is. Kirk, over to you.
Well, thank you. And you know, for me, it was an interesting process for the APR, and I'll see if I can make this a short version of it, is I had been a member of the Public Relations Society of America for probably 15 years and had been doing things well, but I just wasn't convinced that I knew what the dickens I was doing. So I wanted to test myself with the accreditation exam. I was in Hawaii and came out of it saying, okay, Kirk, you've been doing this PR stuff for a long time. You've got it figured out. And it really gave me the confidence to push forward and to, with my organization there and in future organizations, be able to advocate for changes in our programming that I knew were the right thing to do. And part of it truly was the ethical side here. But it's been a terrific journey. And most recently, I've been teaching public relations at various colleges. I'm now down in Florida. And introducing my students to ethics and helping them to understand how important it is as an aspect in public relations. So I'll stop yapping there, but it's kind of just the overview of why I'm here and why I love being accredited.
And tell us what a fellow is. That's an extra designation.
But the fellow PRSA is, and I feel weird when I talk about it, because theoretically we represent sort of the been there, done all of that portion of PRSA. You have to have a certain number of years of experience before you can do it. And I wasn't totally convinced that I was qualified for it when I went through applied for it. And son of a gun, somebody somewhere decided that maybe this guy knows what he's doing. But this is something else that I use again in my academic life today and in my previous lives to show people that not only do you belong to a professional organization, but you want to strive to be the best you can be. As we used to say when I did PR for the Army, be all you can be. And for me, I feel like it with APR, okay, I know what I'm doing here. Fellow PRSA, apparently I've shown others who are a heck of a lot smarter than I am that I do have a clue.
Very good. Well, we're so glad to have you with us this evening, Kirk. Appreciate your time tonight. And I'll turn it over now to Kathy Kajigian. Kathy, you and I have our work cut out for us as APRs now. Our next step is to become a fellow. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey.
And that is inspirational, Kirk. And I think you were on a couple of, you were a facilitator when I was on my APR journey. And so you are teaching people, and not necessarily those that are smarter than you, but maybe a few of them are. And that's interesting to hear that, you know, those who pursue their APR tend to be lifelong learners. And so to see that there's a journey that we can keep moving on this path is really exciting. The APR journey was, like Kirk had said, that it was something that he did and was able to help advocate in his organization and to put in place things that he knew were right. And for me, in school PR, you can see in the chat, some of us school PR folks are connecting here. Sorry, I completely lost my train of thought there. I got to put that chat away. I knew what I was doing in my school system. You know, I had a sense for what was right. And the APR process, yes, receiving my APR, but going through this process and learning and thinking through, again, especially the ethics, applying that to my everyday work and having a framework really allowed me to have that impact that Kirk was talking about and that we all know, feels so good when you are feeling that success in implementing a strategic plan or a communications plan and you see it working.
Good. I couldn't agree with both of you. I think that achieving the APR, I did mine much later in my career. And I have to say, I use the tools every day on the job. So it's not a waste of time. It's definitely something that you can use every day. So we're so glad, Kathy, you're with us as well. We're going to continue on and talk a little bit more about ethics and law. And I want to remind some of the other people in the class, if you're just joining us tonight for the first time, not to worry. This is a self-study course. You can go at your own pace. You can take another online cohort if you need to. So if you're just joining us tonight, you are not behind. You can study at your own pace. So just stay with us and you'll pick it up. You'll get to learn how this process works as we go through each course. Now, one of the things we talk about in ethics and law is confidentiality. And a lot of you deal with that. If you're in a public company, you're dealing with confidentiality of the executives. If it's a public company, you're dealing with confidentiality relative to SEC regulations that you may have read about. So part of it we want to remind you too is we are confidential. We respect the confidentiality of everyone on the call. So some of you on this call tonight may not want others to know that you're studying for your APR. So if you're going to share names that you see in the course or give out your personal information, just make sure it's okay with the other person. So that's our first lesson in ethics is how we work together on the call. And as we do every week, if you're new to the call, you'll receive a task sheet the week before. So everyone should have received the task sheet for module two. It gives you all the links to the readings for each week. The readings consist of what's in the APR study guide, which is our framework, what we all use. Plus there's supplemental reading, which comes from the short list of reading material. If you have some of those short books like Effective Public Relations or Strategies and Tactics, those help to augment what you're already learning in the within the framework of the APR study guide. You sign into this course once a week, but there's also an online course at the website Online to Learn. That's where a lot of the course activities take place. And that's another way to reinforce your learning. A lot of folks think this is the online course. This is just the cohort. This is where we come and sort of discuss what we've learned. But the online course itself is a separate learning module. And after you get through so many of those, I believe it's about 75% complete with the online modules, then you can apply to get a certificate for getting through that 75% mark. So that's something that you could also work to as you're embarking on this journey to earn your APR. So the code of ethics, one of the things that we study in ethics are understanding the values that we all subscribe to as members of the PRSA, the principles that we all use to identify how we can make the right ethical decisions, particularly if you're in a situation where you might have a bit of an ethical dilemma. We're going to talk a little bit about that tonight as well. I think we've all probably in public relations been in that situation where you're not quite sure if there's a dilemma, not quite sure what to do, or you're looking at maybe the optics don't seem right, but is it an ethical dilemma, or is it truly could potentially be a violation of the code of ethics? So we're going to talk about more of that a little bit later in the course. There are also Quizlets available. Some of you prefer to use Quizlets. If you do, there's a link in the module two reading so that you can go to the Quizlets and learn a little bit more about the principles, the laws, the ethical decision-making process. And as you're going through those Quizlets, do keep in mind that one of the things that you want to remember is it's not about memorizing. I mean, we can memorize the laws. I mean, you do have to know them. But one of the important things that you're going to learn on the computer-based exam is it's how do you apply what you learned? How do you apply the laws or the principles or the ethics? And we're going to learn a little bit more about that later in one of the presentations. Now, one of the things that we do to help reinforce that type of learning, which is how do I apply what I've learned or read, is through scenario-based questions. And we're going to study, we have a couple of those. I think we have three people presenting tonight, so we're really happy to have that. Volunteering is another good way to reinforce the learning. One of the questions we get asked a lot in the course is, you know, I'm not a lawyer. I don't want to be a lawyer. How are we supposed to study all these precedents and cases? It can be daunting when you open up the AP guide, AP style guide, and you see all these laws and legal concerns. So what is it that we really have to know? And one of the things you have to be careful about with law is understanding just enough to know to ask the right questions. You may not have all the answers, but at least what you want to know is are those higher level laws, principles that at least prompt a further question. So maybe I don't quite understand if I have a copyright violation, but I know enough to know that I need to get legal counsel involved. And that's really what you want to learn. And I'm going to ask my panelists, I'll turn to you first, Kirk. How do you approach law and applying that in your daily work? Are you a lawyer? How do you know the difference? I'll turn that over to Kirk. Can you unmute yourself, Kirk?
Sorry.
There you are.
Yeah. totally forgot. You know, absolutely, I'm not a lawyer, and I'm going to give a quick example and then I'll jump into it. Is my stepfather was in fact a lawyer, and I asked him one time, I was in his office, and I go, how do you know all this stuff? And he turned around and pointed at the bookshelf in his office, and he says, I know where to find the information. And that to me is the most important part. And yeah, I've been doing this for a gazillion years here. And this morning I was looking through some paperwork and I found a printout that I had done of the PRSA Code of Ethics. And I found myself with 896,000th time reading the blasted thing. But it's just, I read this, and when something makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up a little bit, first of all, I look at the Code of Ethics, and is there something in here that applies to this? And if I'm in a corporate situation or whatever it might be, as you say, I go find our corporate attorney and I say, here's the deal. You tell me how you see this. And we come to an agreement on how we're going to address it from the public relations side. But I want to make doggone sure that I don't step over the boundary and come off sounding like a lawyer who knows everything. But it's the familiarity, knowing that you don't know it all, but you know where to go get it.
Good advice. Kathy, in school PR, you must have issues come up like this all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And Kirk, no, you don't want to sound like a lawyer as a communicator. So, yes, in school PR, I was just dealing with a FOIA today. You know, we try to guide our, you know, in this environment where teachers are teaching online and maybe sharing online, we have a lot of copyright issues coming up. So we're kind of the guide there. We don't need to know it all, but one of the benefits of being an APR is just, like Kirk said, that familiarity with what we need to be considering. We don't need to know it all, but we need to know what we need to be thinking about. We need the vocabulary that we were given in studying for our APR. So the law is one area where when I was studying, it was one of those aha moments where, oh, I see where this puzzle fits together. I could piece it all together and the clear picture came out. You know, when you can apply what you're learning on a daily basis, in studying the law was one area where that was really clear.
And working in school PR, you're working with children, so I'm sure privacy is also a big concern.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Have to think about that all the time.
Good. Well, let's move on to some scenario practice questions. And one of the things I wanted to remind you of, we have three volunteers tonight. And if you're in a position and would love to volunteer, we would love to have you present. This is one way, we call this active learning, that we have you participate, but going through the process of creating the question, understanding the material, and then learning it, it helps you do better on the exam. I know I speak for a number of people who might be on this call tonight who've earned their APRs. One of the keys is understanding the scenario-based question. So if you're new to this tonight, don't worry. What we do with a scenario question is we take one of the KSAs and then you develop a question around that KSA, and then you find probably five plausible answers that all could be right, because this is how the test is structured, from which the people reading the scenario question would have to select two correct answers. And then you present your rationale. Basically, you take that from the study material. So APR, and we also have another opportunity tonight. I don't think it's Michelle, but I think we have presentation notes. Natalie is going to present the module notes for tonight. So what the nice part about this is, if you miss a class or you didn't quite understand it, you can go back to the recordings. Michael will share a link to the recordings and you can listen to it then. So we will also have module notes to cover as well. So we're going to start with the KSA, but before we do, let's remember to listen carefully to the scenario question. And when you do these on the test, you're going to have probably about 3 to 5 sentence paragraph that you'll be reading. Then you consider, you're going to look for keywords within that question that might indicate what KSA they're testing for. And then you're going to look at the list of answers and you're going to respond to the best answer that fits that scenario. One thing to keep in mind is most of the questions on the computer-based exam have 5 choices, but 2 best answers. And they're all pretty darn close, especially the 2 that are the right ones. And you don't get partial credit, so you have to get both of them or you get nothing. So keep that in mind. That's why we really got to know the material well, but practice these questions. They are so important. And Christine, I'll ask you please to unmute yourself and read this practice question. I'll advance the slides for you.
Okay. Hello, everybody. Okay. You are the director of PR at a large private university located in a densely populated suburb of a large metropolitan area. The chemistry department chair arrived at the lab an hour ago and immediately noticed missing a huge cache of dangerous chemicals, ones which used in combination are known to make explosives. Public safety notified proper law enforcement authorities who've deemed the incident an immediate threat to campus and community safety. They're asking you to immediately provide personal identifying information of all those granted access to the lab this semester. According to the university's FERPA policy, you are authorized as a school official with legitimate educational interests. The media have arrived and they too are asking for student information. The dean of students is unavailable. What is the best next step? Select 1. A, you can provide the list of student names and directory level information about each student to both law enforcement and the media, but that's it. Any further information requires law enforcement get a court order or a subpoena. B, you can provide any and all relevant information about each student to both law enforcement and the media, but only if you first get permission from each student or their parent or guardian. C, you can provide any and all relevant information about each student to law enforcement without permission from students or parents and guardians because of the health or safety emergency exception when immediate action is determined necessary by law enforcement. No information can be released to the media. And then D, you can only provide the list of students and their directory information to law enforcement and the media.
Good question. Okay, we're seeing a lot of C. Oh, for the most part, it's C. Okay, very good. It sounds like a lot of people did the reading. I thought maybe we might have some. Okay, A, yeah, A looked plausible as well. Very good. Okay, Christine, I'm gonna advance and.
Okay, the answer is C. You can provide any and all relevant information about each student to law enforcement without permission from students or parent guardians because of the health or safety emergency exception when immediate action is determined necessary by law enforcement. No information can be released to the media.
Very good. And I made a
So I got this error. Information from the Department of Education website, which is sort of the Bible for this particular law. And there are a couple of references that I've highlighted here that you can refer to.
Very good.
I think I made it too easy.
Well, I don't know. Let's find out. I think it was structured very well. Let's start with Kathy this time. Kathy, what did you think of the question? Too easy, similar?
No, I think it was a thoughtful question and kind of laid out, it helped my learning a little bit reading through that. And that's always a good question that helps you learn. I think you won't see something quite that specific on the computer-based exam, but kind of the concepts that were embedded in that question, and like you said, the structure is similar to something that you'd see in the thought process of what you need to think of to rule out questions or rule out answers that are not correct, because sometimes that's the easiest way to answer the question is to determine which are not correct first.
That was kind of my question with this particular law and the two other ones that are listed in the KSA. They don't appear anywhere in the materials. You have to look them up. And I just didn't know how drilled down in detail we needed to be in terms of knowledge of those three laws.
Well, that's a good point. And usually on the test, they really question, they test the basics. So, but I think you did a good job following the thought process. And I think that's really what we're trying to learn here is, okay, how am I going about choosing the right answer? And Kirk, if you can jump in here and take answer, you know, and kind of give us a little guidance on how would you have approached this question on the test?
What we've been saying here, and I was struggling with it because I was kind of torn for a second, but then I started weighing the two possibilities there, and saw that, and what it made me do was sort of run through and say, okay, what are the issues, the ethical issues that I'm thinking about here, and you know, we're getting into the provisions of conduct where we start talking about disclosure of information, safeguarding confidences, et cetera. And I love it that it makes you really sort of compartmentalize the different provisions and the different values and say which apply for this. But it means you've got to be familiar with the whole thing. You can't just do a skim and say, yeah, I got it there, I've read it. You need to understand where it's coming from.
Good. Good. So let's move on to another question. Thank you for that one, Christine. And for this one, we're going to ask Sarah, if you would please unmute yourself.
Great. So you are a communications director for a prominent healthcare corporation, and your IT director informed you that the personal information of thousands of patients may have been compromised from a cyber attack. To avoid panic, he's asked you to keep it between you two only. What is the first thing you would do? So for this one, you just select one. A, ask the IT team to launch an internal investigation to pinpoint what information and how many patients may have been compromised. B, email all patients to notify them of the potential incident and that their information may have been compromised, but wait to issue a public statement. C, create a crisis communication plan. D, consult your legal team on what to do. Or E, email all patients to notify them of the potential incident and issue a public statement to proactively get ahead of the story.
Okay, good question. Okay, and we have a lot of different answers. We have a little bit of A, B, some C's. Okay, A, majority or A, a couple of D's. So this is an example of, okay, there could be... any of these could be right answers. Not a lot of C's. So I think, very good. Right, C should have been done before this. Exactly, it's a little bit late now. Good. All right, let's move on. Sarah?
So the answer is A. To ask the IT team to launch an internal investigation to pinpoint what information and how many patients may have been compromised. And there's two different rationales behind this one. In particular, it is identifying the six-step process defined, which would be defining the specific ethical issue or conflict and identifying internal and external factors prior to taking any additional actions. But you also could use it, the four-step process can also be a source of rationale behind option A, as the first step being research. A lot of the other options may have been appropriate later down the line, but we need to be able to accurately define the specific ethical issue or conflict to be able to accurately respond to it.
Very good. Nice question. Kirk, I'll turn to you first. Can you comment on, you know, the formatting of the question, the rationale? Was this something you would see on the test?
I would think you would see something like this. And I think it's an excellent question because once again, you're getting a couple of viable alternatives here, and you've really got to sort of wade through the weeds here and figure out what is it we really, really need to do. And I'll be the first one to say that I absolutely put the wrong answer down because I got too wrapped up in trying to think about how we're going to deal with this thing, and I jumped the gun. But I think it was an excellent question, and it's taught me something that I'll be using in class when I go Thursday for my PR class.
There you go. Kathy, what about you? Anything to add?
I think this is a great question, and it points to one key skill that you're going to want to have when you're taking the exam, and that's looking for keywords. And the keyword in that question was first. What are you going to do first? And if you think back to the decision-making process and know that the first step is define the specific ethical issue, or even if that isn't your frame of mind when you're looking at that question, looking at that word first, you know, you'll maybe want to underline it, highlight it with your online tools, looking for words like that, because that will really help you answer the question.
Yeah, that's a good point, Kathy, about looking for keywords and looking for anything that's that numbers or next step, because a lot of what we're learning here is a process. And in many of the different situations we'll find ourselves in, we have to follow steps. So in crisis management, there's a series of steps that you have to follow in a given order. So it won't ask you what's step number 6 of the APR ethical decision-making process. It's going to give you a scenario just like this. And as Kathy and Kirk have described, you're going to have to pick out those words and think back, okay, how does this process work? What should I do next? And to help you better answer that. So let's move on. I think we have one more scenario-based question. Shoyini, you can unmute yourself, please.
Good evening.
Hi there.
Your PR firm is representing a local health and beauty company that wants to use influencers to promote their latest product at a launch party in New York, where their company sales are down. 3 out of 5 of the influencers are celebrities the contracts with the company as paid spokespersons. The other 2 influencers are local NYC journalists who have established their own personal brands and are considering promoting the event and products on their personal social media sites. The journalists refuse payment to cover the event, so the health and beauty company asks you to offer them $10,000 in products each, but not to draw up an official influencer contract.
Okay.
What 2 PRSA code of ethics provisions are most likely to come into play when determining the specific ethical issue or conflict in this scenario? A, free flow of information. B, safeguarding confidence. C, conflict of interest. Or D, disclosure of information. So,
okay, so we've got a lot of C and D's. Yeah, some A and C. That's a different one. Okay, so Yini, let's reveal the answer.
Okay, the answers are C and D. The rationale is, I won't read all of this, but the first part, PRSA's Board of Ethics and Professional Standards takes a position that anyone who is paid to serve as a spokesperson, advocate, or influencer for an organization, company, brand, or special interest must disclose the contractual agreement in place or the relationship between a spokesperson and the interest that is providing the compensation. And all of the ones that were listed, conflict of interest and disclosure of information, were the only 2 that were applicable to this scenario.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Soyini. Kirk, what did you think of that question?
Love it. Possible? The conflict of interest is such a challenge for all of us. And but you really have to think through this and tie the two together. And the disclosure of information ties almost directly into that conflict of interest, because if you're not upfront in telling people where you're coming from or what you're doing, as I say so many times in the classroom, I will find out. So go ahead and tell me up front, and let me decide as a member of the public. So a great question, real life kinds of questions that we get into so many different times, regardless of what kind of industries we're in. So well done.
Good. Kathy, what did you think?
I agree. I thought that was a question that really brought out the thinking of and the knowledge of the code of ethics. And you all definitely will want to be very, very familiar with the code of ethics and be thinking through it, again, applying it to your everyday work and life. And this question was a good application of the code of ethics.
Yeah, I think she did a good job as well. So all three of you, I want to thank all of you for participating and writing such good questions. Keep doing this. I know it's a little bit challenging to write these questions. It was my least favorite thing to do when I was studying for the APR, but it was the one thing that I think was responsible for successfully completing the computer-based exam. And also, you know, studying, but these really are key to helping you learn the material. And then once you get into the test, you're just much more familiar with how the format's going to go. So keep studying and keep working on those scenario-based questions. Now, Natalie Conrad is going to present for us this evening, and she took all those laws and all those ethics and principles, and she was able to condense them into a number of slides. She's done all the reading for us and highlighted what was important. And again, this will be available in a recording after this course is over, and Michael will send you the link to it, so you'll be able to reference these very excellent notes. Natalie, if you'd like to take over from here.
Thank you, Joan. So yeah, I gathered some notes here about the ethics and law portion. So first, just kind of starting out with outlining the KSAs. So first of all, integrity, just looking at conducting professional activities in a lawful and principled manner. I think we've all kind of heard that PR can sometimes be the moral compass of an organization. And then looking at ethical behavior, understanding and adhering to commonly accepted standards for professional behavior, recognizing those ethical dilemmas, and then, you know, acting fast to remedy any unethical acts. And then looking at First Amendment issues, just showcasing that you have an understanding of the First Amendment and how it is a foundational principle to public relations, understanding the differences between political and corporate speech, understanding things like libel and slander, and then kind of the impact of digital record on both the status of public and private figures. And then privacy issues, just understanding a number of laws regarding privacy, which I know we've covered a few of those today. Depending on what industry you're in, there's, you know, a number of different laws regarding privacy, but it's good to kind of have an overview of all of them, you know, knowing that the exam will likely have, you know, some laws that you may not actually use in your practice. And then also being aware of things like identity protection, you know, it, being able to advise your organization as far as, you know, the effective use of technology, and then a number of other legal issues regarding disclosure, copyright, trademarks, fair use, and things like that. And then, yeah, I don't know why my headers shrunk for some reason. But
it could have been me when, you know, sometimes when you import.
No worries. You know, looking at some of the principles for public relations practice, you know, we're committed to acting in the public interest. So kind of a utilitarianism approach of, you know, finding what benefits the majority of the people, using honesty and integrity as your guide, avoiding conflicts of interest, and, you know, of course, disclosing any potential conflicts of interest as soon as you identify them, dealing fairly with all publics, you know, including respecting yourself and others, ensuring those high standards, and then also, you know, as you're transitioning from one job to the next, leaving that, you know, information behind, ensuring accuracy and truth. So, you know, promoting the free exchange of ideas, but making sure that you're not providing any false or misleading information, and correcting any errors immediately. The sooner the better. And then looking at the principles defining how public relations is practiced, you know, accurately defining what public relations strategies and tactics can accomplish, and not guaranteeing results beyond your control. I think this is really important for me. I've been in a lot of roles where I've been part of a marketing department. I'm like the one PR person, or, you know, I find myself surrounded by a lot of people in marketing. And I think knowing the difference between marketing and PR, and also looking at that and how you guarantee any results, that, you know, looking at uncontrolled communications versus controlled and how different that is, you know, with earned media, you're not paying for it, so you don't have a ton of control over it. So I think pointing that out is really important, especially when you're in those settings where, you know, maybe you are the only PR professional in that setting. And then maintaining the integrity of the communications channels. So things like ensuring transparency, maintaining ethical relationships, safeguarding confidences, you know, building trust through the protection of confidential information, and also really securing the privacy of your organization and any individuals involved. You know, in general, just trying to not damage the reputation of others as much as possible. Stick to the facts, avoid gossip as much as you can, which I think is just a good thing to do in life in general. And then avoiding any conflicts of interest as well. And then the decision-making process I found really helpful. I think a lot of us use aspects of this process without even knowing the full process itself. I kind of think it's similar to the RPI process in that way, that most of us are using some aspects of the process, but maybe we've never seen it, you know, laid out in this format. And I think this can be a really helpful resource, you know, if you can even put it on a post-it or put it somewhere in your office and kind of use it whenever you, you know, are put in these ethical situations, which I find that we're in a lot. So starting out with defining the specific ethical issue or conflict, you can't really deal with a conflict until you really know what it is. Then identifying those internal and external factors, which could be legal, political, social, economic, and then going into those key values kind of outlined in the PRSA Code of Ethics. And then from there, identifying the individuals and publics who will be affected by the decision and defining your obligation to each. This part to me is, I mean, all the parts are very important, but this part I think is incredibly important to just really take that time to really fully analyze everyone that will be affected by your decision. You know, obviously your internal audience is incredibly important, and then looking at your stakeholders, but really reaching beyond that and looking at how it will affect the greater good and the public as a whole. And then selecting those ethical principles to guide your decision-making process. And then finally making your decision and justifying it. And I find that going through this process really helps you in being able to justify your decision. You can easily go back to the previous steps and show how you came to that decision, which is really helpful. And then going into the law is my favorite part. knowing the difference between corporate speech and commercial speech, I think is a great foundation to have. Corporate speech is focusing more on political or social issues and has First Amendment protection, whereas commercial speech is dealing more with transactions or profit. And it's a good thing to note that the FTC can actually fine public relations practitioners for providing misleading or incorrect information. And then copyright is a huge piece of this section as well. Just really understanding that the two major goals of copyright laws are to protect the creator of the work and to provide economic incentive for new knowledge. And then going into common law copyright, an author who creates a tangible expression of his or her ideas immediately acquires that common law copyright for their work. And, breaking that down into the general publication. So any overt act that indicates the intention to surrender one's right to control one's creative expression and allow the public to copy the material, limited publication, we're looking at, a delivery of a manuscript to a possible purchaser. So that does not cause the author to lose any common law rights. And then defamation, looking at any untruth that damages someone's reputation, which is, I think just a crucial area to know as a PR professional, especially dealing with any, issues management or crisis communications. Libel is the written or pictorial defamation, and kind of knowing all the different pieces of that, for something to be considered libel, these five elements must be present. So defamation, identification, communication, fault, and damage. And then the four defenses are truth, privilege, fair comment, and retraction. And then slander is the spoken or verbal defamation. And for something to be considered defamation, the three conditions of hatred, contempt, and ridicule must be present. And knowing the difference, I think, between fair comment and fair use is really important. Just anything that sounds kind of similar, it's good to know the differentiation between the two. I like to just try to split it up as fair comment is dealing with defamation and fair use is dealing with copyright. But fair comment, insulates a reporter or publication against defamation. And then fair use, we're focusing more on how it allows use of copyrighted materials without violating copyright laws. When it's used for certain purposes, such as criticism, comment, news reporting, teaching. And it's one of those areas where it's very much a gray area. It's one of the most difficult areas to kind of draw the line. And then privacy, another really important piece of this section. Just knowing someone's right to be left alone and what all that entails and how it's different from defamation and how, the goal is to protect an individual who just simply doesn't want to be depicted in a certain way. And anything that, injures their feelings, even though it might not actually have an effect on their reputation. And I think, a good thing for us as PR practitioners is to pretty much anytime you're using a photo of someone to always ask for rights, have something signed, always look for that added layer of protection to, protect the organization, protect the person, protect yourself as much as possible. And then just going into the four different kinds of wrongful acts that can violate privacy, appropriation, which I think happens a lot, especially as mentioned here, celebrities' photo being used that they didn't want used. Intrusion is huge, I think, especially with social media. People are taking photos and video of everything now. So you never know who's going to end up in the background of something or, people often have no idea that they're, in a viral video that's everywhere. The public disclosure of embarrassing private facts, things like medical information. I know, we mentioned HIPAA earlier, things like that. And then false light, I think, is definitely a hard one to determine, but basically just somebody being put in a false position that they don't want to be in. So And then I just wanted to provide a list of some of the resources I used, which are all on the task list as well, but just I used the study guide. I used the readings in this course, as well as two of the handouts. And then I reviewed the section in the AP style book about media law, as well as the effective public relations chapters 5 and 6. And I found all those resources really helpful.
Wow. Well, that was wonderful. And I see you're getting great comments in the chat. Natalie, you did an excellent job. That was a lot of information to distill in a few slides. So thank you for that. Very well done. Kathy, what did you think of the notes?
Those were outstanding. I liked how you put so much really relevant information. That's exactly what you need to be thinking about. And as you were going through the notes, you were talking about the application of your knowledge. And I guarantee you, you will get through the exam with flying colors on the law and ethics section. It clarified everything. I would encourage everyone to go back and watch the recording of this or go through the slides so you can learn from Natalie's work, because it really was just a great outline of this topic.
It really was. And Kirk, I wanted to ask you as an educator, is there an area that you particularly focus on with your students, that maybe a problem area that you would suggest to our APR candidates here to focus on?
I think one of the interesting, and this may sound so elementary, but fair use is something that I from the very, very beginning, I have found it to be a little bit of a challenge, because I give assignments and students will find someone else who said something, and instead of just doing an excerpt and saying as such as this person said, they dive in and give me the whole ball of wax here, and I go, no, you can't do that. This is not yours. And what I tell them also, I says, my friend Mr. Google will help me find what you wrote here. So it is, I think that's one of the key things that we find, and they don't know that it's wrong. They, speaking of the quote younger generation today, they're so used to getting everything from out there that they think it's okay. So with Natalie's permission, I'm going to be using a lot of these slides in my upcoming class when we talk about ethics and everything else, because there's fantastic information there.
Yeah, very good. Well, thank you for that. That's important. And next up, we are going to have an MBA class scenario. And the basic purpose of this is really to take what you learned about the readings. A lot of it involved what we learned in the first module. Take what you learned and create a presentation. How would you describe the PR function to a class of MBA students? And for that, we have Kim Bergeron. Kim, if you'll unmute yourself, I'll advance to your slide. Over to you.
Okay, thank you. And I'm going to present today as if I were presenting to management to describe what it is that public relations professionals do. So with that, we'll start with, went one too many. What is public relations? And it's the role of your public relations counsel is to serve the public, which is both internal and external publics, and relations, the way two or more people are connected. Ergo, public relations is building the connections between management and its publics, which includes employees, customers, and shareholders. And how can we help? First, with policies, procedures, and actions. Public Relations Council works directly with the management. It's more effective that way. We can update policies to adapt to changing needs and expectations as they occur, develop new policies and procedures to remain relevant, and analyze the impact and effects of the modified policies. Your public relations team is critical to issues management. Public Relations Council is skilled in responding swiftly and effectively to challenging situations. A crisis unmanaged can cause insurmountable damage and reputation damage and other problems. Timely and appropriate response with strategic messaging can diffuse volatile situations. And that's really, really critical in time-sensitive issues that could destroy a company. We can help contain or reduce liability. And our job is to present the company in its best light and its leadership. And brand enhancement, your public relations council creates opportunities for positive branding in the community and beyond, showcasing the organization's commitment to the community, spotlighting company management, products, service initiatives, and even employees who have gone above and beyond. And we build goodwill within the community, which makes people want to work with us. And the key about the public relations professionals is that we provide mastery in messaging. We're trained to know what's legal, what's effective, and the proper procedures to get that messaging out there for the best results. And lastly, we work with the company and its employees to treat our employees as ambassadors of the company. Public relations, the company's number one public is its employees. And a lot of organizations fail to recognize that. Employees need to feel like they're valued, and critical, especially in this day and age, the company needs written social media policies that define the company's expectations of employees as brand ambassadors. And when in doubt, don't, especially when it comes to posting on social media, because one statement, as we've seen a lot lately, can cause you to be fired, among other things. And from the management standpoint, that one statement can do a lot of harm to the company. So it's very important that the Public Relations Council work with the employees so they understand what that policy is and they abide by it. And that's kind of it in a nutshell.
Yeah, wonderful job, Kim. I loved it. It was excellent. Kirk, if I'll turn it over to you. What did you think? Do you have a good understanding if you were an executive not quite sure what PR function was? Would this help?
I have used these ideas in so many different scenarios, sitting down with someone and saying, if you don't do this, this is what's going to happen. And I love that the portion about employees as ambassadors, that is, has been my crusade for eons, is that whatever happened, and I'm going to use real fast, let me do a quick example. Blood Bank of Hawaii, we had a messy case that we were settling in court, and I got the results very, very early in the morning. I went in, I made doggone sure that every single one of our employees knew what had happened and why, before it even made it to the public media. Because they're the people that are going out in the evening and they're going to go shopping, and somebody's going to say, oh, I see you wearing your Blood Bank of Hawaii badge. Oh, I saw about you. And instead of them saying, well, gee, I don't know what happened, is that, yeah, Kirk told us about all of this, and this is what happened, and this is why. And make sure that they understand. So love it. The fantastic. Sorry if I get a little bit carried away here. This is some great stuff dealing with. May I use one profane comment that I was given one time, because this plays into it. My first job with the Army Intelligence School, I was an intern, my first assignment. And I marched into the commander's office, the president, if you will. Kirk Hazlett, sir, I'm reporting here to work as your public affairs officer. He looked at me, and this are his words. Why the hell are you here? Oh. And I told him immediately, I said, sir, I've been downtown talking with the folks in the local community. Nobody knows who you are. You have an image problem. I'm going to fix that for you. But it's just that. And he started to recognize that, yeah, this public affairs guy kind of knows what he's doing. And he would start turning to me in senior staff meetings and say, PIO, what do you think about this? And one of my colleagues, coworkers, said, Kirk, you're the first public affairs guy he's ever turned to for advice. So yeah, it's there. Sorry, I got carried
away.
Very
good. No, that's a great story. Kathy, how about you? Anything to add to that?
Just real quick, we talk in school PR, and I'm sure in public relations in many other industries, about having a seat at the table. And that presentation was an outline of how to get a seat at the table.
Yes, it was really wonderful job, Kim. Thank you so much for presenting this evening and for volunteering. Well, we are coming up on the hour, and I just wanted to remind you that next week is going to be Module 3. It's going to be Communication Models. And I think Patrick will be with you next week. And I want to, before I forget, thank everybody who presented this evening. We had Christine, Soyini, Sarah, Natalie, Kim. Thank you all so much for presenting. And also a wonderful thank you and applause for Kirk and Kathy. We really loved having you again. And you're always so great to listen to, and we learn a lot from you. So thanks, everyone. It was a great class, and we will see you next week. Enjoy.